It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, artisan breads are delicious and they're beautiful, but who has time to bake like that every day? On this week's edition of Food Friday, a cookbook author says you do. It only takes 5 minutes of active work a day. First, artesian wells form when groundwater becomes trapped in between layers of clay or shale and then becomes pressurized. If that aquifer is tapped by a well, water rises to the surface and even flows naturally out of the ground, and it's generally safe to drink. A survey from the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation found there were once almost 11,000 artesian wells in the state. As many as 1,000, though, have dried up. A new report suggests ways that local communities can protect their local artesian wells. This comes amid an ongoing dispute over a proposed water bottling operation that would use artesian water in Bayfield County. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there an artesian well in your community? How do you think water from these aquifers should be regulated? Do you think that a bottling operation should be able to tap into Wisconsin's artesian wells? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll start with a look at the proposed water bottling plant in Bayfield County. Danielle Kading is a WPR reporter based in Superior. I talked with her on Wednesday. Well, let's go back to last spring. Danny, a resident of Duluth, wanted to sell water from this artesian well located on property near Lake Superior. Concerns from residents, the proposal initially rejected by Bayfield County. Can you tell us what led the opposition to this this plan?
Well, I think people have very strong feelings about water and water quality and the sustainability of water resources and the effects that a project like this would have on the watershed and area wetlands. And so I don't think it sat very well with many people in the area that this startup would take artesian water and sell it for profit.
There's the Great Lakes Compact, which comes into play a lot of times when people want to use water near the Great Lakes. It's complicated. How does it fit in here?
Well, the Great Lakes Compact, as you know, is a landmark agreement that was passed by Congress and signed into law in 2008 to prevent large-scale water diversions from the Great Lakes. And so some have argued that this exploits a loophole in the compact or violates the intent of the agreement. But under that compact, water can be removed from the Great Lakes Basin in containers of roughly 6 gallons or less.
Now, this proposal initially rejected quite a while ago. Why is it still in action? What's the latest?
Well, right now, as you know, the Bayfield County Board of Appeals upheld a denial of Crystal Clear's request for a special land use permit to harvest and sell water from property owned by Crystal Myshack and her father in Herbster. And so that decision was appealed in Bayfield County Circuit Court, and I believe it's since been moved to Barron County, and so that litigation is still ongoing. And I think there is a brief due in the case coming up on Monday.
In your reporting on this, Danny, there was some question raised over, you know, whether the local government element, in this case the county, can stop something like this with local zoning laws and things like that versus what's under state authority. Is that part of what's at issue in these lawsuits now?
When the Bayfield County Board of Appeals was hearing arguments from both sides on this issue, you know, Crystal Myshack's attorney basically argued that the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has sole permitting authority over groundwater wells, and that would include things like piping and storage of water from a well. And he said that the county really, that this didn't fall into their authority. But the town's attorney, the town of Clover, which is better known as Herbster, Max Lindsay, he contended that the county is basically exercising their authority over land use. And he argued that the proposal didn't qualify for a permit because it lies in this area that is zoned for residential development and recreational use, not for a bottled water plant.
Have we seen other disputes over artesian wells around Wisconsin? What's happened to them?
So there have been proposals in the past. I'm not sure if it's specific to artesian wells, but there have been proposals to pump groundwater for bottled water by the company Perrier around 2000. And there was another proposal in 2015 by Trigg Solberg that ran afoul of the Great Lakes Water Compact because he wanted to take well water from Vilas County and bottle it in Minocqua. And that essentially would be moving that water outside of the Lake Superior Basin and into another watershed. And Peter could tell you more about that.
What's happening now with this story, this effort in Bayfield County? What are you watching for next?
So we'll be following the litigation and any changes that Bayfield County might make related to concerns over artesian water use and the groundwater aquifer up there. You know, Norfolk College put out this report making some recommendations of how the county could possibly move forward to protect their aquifer. And so we'll be looking to see if any action comes out of that. And I believe they are taking some action right now to study the artesian well aquifer, or I'm sorry, artesian water aquifer in Bayfield County.
As we wrap up, Danny, you mentioned earlier a strong, almost visceral reaction from the community to plans to bottle the water. County officials said community members submitted more than 1,600 comments of opposition to the plan. Can you talk a little more about just the type of opposition, the feeling people had about these wells?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you asked, Rob. I mean, I think there was a lot of fear that this proposal would not only threaten the sustainability of water resources, you know, tribes in northern Wisconsin also raised issues with tribal treaty rights because the proposal is located in ceded territory. And so how would that affect their rights in the area? And, you know, opponents also argued that the proposal hadn't undergone a complete environmental review and that this would essentially open the door to other corporations to come in with proposals to bottle and sell water like Nestle or other bottled water companies.
Danny, thanks a lot for bringing us up to date.
Thanks, Rob.
Danielle Kading is a WPR reporter based in Superior. She joined us Wednesday to talk about an ongoing dispute over a potential water bottling operation near Lake Superior. Now we continue our conversation about artesian wells, taking a look at a report out of Northland College about how to protect these natural resources. Peter Annan is a director of the Mary Griggs Burke Center for Freshwater Innovation. The Burke Center is based out of Northland College in Ashland. Peter, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Good to be with you.
Well, you released this report, recommendations on how to protect artesian resources here in Wisconsin. What are some of your main recommendations?
Well, the most interesting thing that I think that came out of this controversy is that no one really knows what the status is of the groundwater system in northern Bayfield County. We know that there's abundant artesian wells in the area. You know, a lot of people have them just outside their front door. They're kind of a local status symbol, even if you will. But not the county, not the state, not the federal government, none of them, those entities have mapped the artesian aquifer entirely and quantified how much water is coming out of that special aquifer on a regular basis and what the natural recharge rate is. So our first recommendation was, hey, you know, from a baseline standpoint, the first thing that the county really should consider doing is just figuring out what's going on underneath our feet here in the Bayfield County area.
Before we get to the other recommendations, can you talk about a little more about what makes artesian aquifers different from the groundwater we might find elsewhere in the state? I gave a very short nuts and bolts definition earlier.
Yeah, and I'm not a scientist, right? I'm a journalist and a policy guy. But the way I describe it to, you know, my kids and others, if you think of a groundwater system that's normal, it's not under pressure. And you have to, you know, drill down and lift the water out with a pump to have it, you know, enter your home or business. But the difference with an artesian well is it is under pressure because it's confined. Think of it like you have a water balloon that's being squeezed a little bit. And if you pierce that, right, the water comes squirting out. And that's what an artesian system is. And again, very layman's term. There might be scientists listening who are cringing at that explanation. And they're really unique. And you didn't used to be so unique in Wisconsin. That's one of the things that we found in the research of this report and that Danielle referred to a little bit in your intro. There used to be amazing artesian wells throughout much of the state, and many of them are gone or shadows of their former selves. And that's really, I think, driving a lot of the angst in Bayfield County is that citizens here have made it clear. You know, they've spoken, and they really have a lot of concern about protecting this unique groundwater system that we have here. And again, one of the things we were just pointing out in the report, it's really hard to protect something when it hasn't even been fully quantified scientifically.
Yeah, so supposing they take that first recommendation, Bayfield County map, these aquifers, what kind of protections then would you hope to see them take up for them?
Well, yeah, and then the next thing is that, you know, that there is some precedent for creating a special zone, a special area of concern. And there, you know, there's a lot of precedent for that with all, you know, wilderness areas and other things. Not that this would necessarily be a wilderness, but that the county or even the state could designate that this artesian zone, once it had been thoroughly mapped scientifically and defined, could have extra special protections over it that would help the county and perhaps others to evaluate and regulate these kinds of proposals so that people aren't caught off guard.
We're talking to Peter Annan, director of the Mary Griggs Burke Center for Freshwater Innovation at Northland College. We're talking about the Burke Center's suggestions on how to protect artesian wells around the state, focusing on Bayfield County, where there's a proposal to bottle some of that artesian water. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have artesian waters in your community? Did you used to? What questions do you have about how to protect them? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Peter Annan, director of the Mary Griggs Burke Center for Freshwater Innovation based at Northland College. We're talking about ways to protect artesian aquifers around Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. This is a concern in your community. If you're in Bayfield County, do you have thoughts on this idea of bottling some of that aquifer water and selling it? Call 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Eugene is with us in Viola. Hey, Eugene.
Well, hello. Good afternoon. In the village of Viola, I can count at one time 10 artesian wells. We're down to about 3 or 4, and I've got one beside the back porch. Originally, this is an old Victorian with about 10 rooms in it. They ran the well into the basement and ran it into the sewer. I can no longer do that. Now, to keep the well, I had to bring it up to state code, which I did. Now, we got a sprinkling system. I use it for watering the yard and watering the car. That's all I can do with it. I've got to get the water tested every 5 years, and I got to get the well checked every 10. Now, if you go to the Kickapoo Valley Reserve above the Fards, I can count at least 5 artesians up there.
Eugene, thanks a lot for the call and for sharing that with us. First of all, he said in his own community, Eugene has seen a decline in the number of aquifers in the area. Peter, is that something we've seen elsewhere in the state?
Yeah, it was one of the most surprising things to me. You know, I've been following water for decades and had known about the artesian systems in places like Viola and the Lafarge area and things like that. But when you dig into the deep history, I mean, we were talking about the state being home to really remarkable artesian wells, like one in Prairie du Chien, known as the Great Artesian Well, that was formerly used to shoot 60 feet into the air. It was really a local landmark. And in the report, we have a photo of that, courtesy of the Wisconsin Historical Society, or another one in Green Bay that was even taller, maybe 90 feet in the air. And now that groundwater system is maybe 300 feet below the surface. And then, of course, one of the more famous cases is in Waukesha, Wisconsin, not so much artesian wells, but a lot of springs there. The community was known as Spring City more than 100 years ago. And there was just springs all over town. They were a major national tourist destination. And most of those springs have dried up. And kind of remarkably, Waukesha was so hurting for water that it became one of the first applicants to receive water from the Great Lakes under a diversion approved by the Great Lakes Compact. So there, I think that's sort of the take-home message here of the white paper, is that many communities in the past have not, or the state or local governments have not done a great job of protecting their really unique groundwater artesian systems. And the residents of Bayfield County have made it clear they don't want to go down that path.
Thanks for that call, Eugene, at 800-642-1234. Steele joins us now in Appleton. Steele, hi.
Hey, everybody. Hey, around 73, 74, Community College in southeast Arizona, and we were driving along the Mexican border pretty close, and all of us, and so it's like 4,000 feet high desert. And so we were going along, and all of a sudden, as we were going on, we saw some green along the side, and it was artesian water, and we followed the road for about an hour, and then it, you know, turned into private property, and it was just a beautiful microclimate, and that's a stark, you know, green to nothing.
But still, anyway. Thanks for the call. We don't have that contrast with desert here, Peter, but are we forming unique ecosystems around these natural artesian aquifers?
Well, this groundwater, a lot of these springs, so we have the artesian wells, and then, as the white paper mentions, when we have the cracks and the geologic formations above these pressurized aquifers, that's where springs bubble out. And this is really cold, really clean water that can often end up being part of the headwaters of cold water ecosystems like trout streams and those kinds of areas. And, you know, I mean, it's not uncommon. I have literally, walking through the woods in Bayfield County, stumble upon a spring I had no idea was there, and it was pouring right into the headwaters of a trout stream. And they're kind of all over up here. And in addition to the artesian wells really being an important natural feature for humans, these springs, which are naturally gurgling out of the ground, are really, really important to the cold water ecosystems that we have up here in the northern part of the state and the southern part of the state, even, you know, in the Kickapoo Valley.
Steele, thanks for the call. Scott joins us now in New Glarus. Scott, hello.
Yes, hello. Seems like the premise of the show is, what can we do to protect these artesian wells? And I have a very succinct answer. Do not allow them to be commercialized. I think that would solve the problem.
Scott, thanks for the call. I know, Peter, there is demand for artesian water in various sizes of bottle. Is that the answer, as Scott says, to not commercialize this artesian water?
Well, I think, you know, one of the issues for places like Bayfield County is finding that balance, right, for the county between, you know, reasonable commercial development and protecting the environment and protecting unique resources like the artesian groundwater system that's here. And that really is a decision for the local officials to make. Bottled water is obviously enormously controversial. We visit that in the white paper. As Danielle mentioned, the Perrier case was one of the most celebrated controversies over bottled water in Wisconsin in the early 1990s. But again, what the white paper says is we can't, I think, you know, definitively protect a system when we haven't even measured it, determined its fragility, and all those things. Really, those broader questions, I think, really need to stand on a foundation that's science-based, and that way those decisions, I think, can be more legally sound, and the decision makers can be more confident that they're not sort of that they have the information that they need to make these hard decisions from a governing standpoint.
You've mentioned a couple times, Peter, that this artesian source water is really quite clean. Are there concerns about pollution of these artesian wells one way or another? And I've heard some concerns raised even for tapping that. If you lower the volume of that, there's concerns about pollution.
Yeah, well, I think there's always concern about pollution in groundwater systems. There's a lot of concern right now in the state, as you know, Rob, about PFAS and some of these other emerging contaminants. In the northeastern part of the state, where they have a karst geology limestone geology where contamination can move through very quickly, and we have some high concentrations of large dairy operations. There are issues with concerns about groundwater over there. I mean, really, all over the state, there are a lot of issues with groundwater and potential contamination, and all over the nation. I mean, this is not just a Wisconsin thing. I think the beauty of a rural, you know, heavily forested county like Bayfield County is that it is in a position to make decisions now that can help prevent the county from going down the road that other parts of the state have gone, and to be more proactive about water quantity and water quality issues. We're in the middle of a global water crisis. Many parts of the United States, and especially now the Southwest, has gone through a two-decade mega drought. We have Lake Powell and Lake Mead, the two largest reservoirs in the country, and the Colorado River system at all-time lows. And so it's a quantity and quality issue. And yeah, I think there are always concerns about water quality with these artesian systems as well, but they do tend to be quite pristine.
Peter, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again today.
You're welcome, Rob.
Peter Annan is director of the Mary Griggs Burke Center for Freshwater Innovation out of Northland College. Earlier, we heard from WPR reporter Danielle Kading, based out of Superior. We talked with them about freshwater aquifers here in Wisconsin. Coming up on this week's edition of Food Friday, new inspiration to make home-baked bread and an easy way to get artisan loaves on your table pretty much whenever you want them. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Congress passed a $1.5 trillion spending package ahead of tonight's deadline for funding the federal government. We'll talk about some of the many things that ended up in the omnibus bill, including aid for Ukraine. Now, home-baked bread is one of the best treats, but between kneading and proofing and resting, it takes a lot of time and work, right? Our next guest says it doesn't have to. He says you can bake beautiful artisan loaves every day with only 5 minutes of active work time. You can join the Food Friday conversation at 800-642-1234. How often do you bake your own bread, if at all? Do you have a favorite kind of bread to make at home? Did you take up bread baking during the pandemic? Or are you like me and you think it's just too much work, even though it's yummy? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jeff Hertzberg is the co-founder of the baking website breadin5.com. He's co-author of the latest cookbook, The Best of Artisan Bread in 5 Minutes a Day, Favorite Recipes from Bread in 5. Jeff, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Rob, thanks for having me. This is fantastic.
Before we get into baking the bread, now you're a doctor who ended up being a cookbook author, and I guess NPR was part of the road from doctor to cookbooks. What happened?
Yeah, so I called into a radio show, 22 years ago on Lynn Rosetta Casper's NPR show, the Splendid Table, and an editor was listening and heard me bragging about this method I'd come up with for storing bread dough in the refrigerator for up to 2 weeks. And that makes it storable and it makes it easy for people to do. And basically it led to 8 cookbooks. I met a chef who was interested in doing the co-authoring it with me, Zoe Francois, who now has her own TV show on the Magnolia Network called Zoe Bakes. So it's been an incredible, sort of a odyssey. I still do medical work. This was a really fun project I did in the last 18 years, I probably spent 5 or 10 of them doing this stuff.
Now, you just mentioned your secret, and you start this new book with the secret it's not a big secret anymore. It's on your website and everywhere. The key, because I think, I'm going to bake a loaf of bread. Well, it's an all-day project today if I want to do that. if we do some premeditated dough making, that makes it a lot easier. Talk about this basic idea that makes the bread baking easier.
Yeah, so the secret, if it's a secret, and it isn't anymore, is if you use enough moisture in the dough, if it's a high moisture dough, first of all, you don't have to knead it. And I didn't invent that. There are a lot of no-knead recipes out there. And they all do depend on a certain level of high moisture at a certain optimal level. It's not so liquidy that you need to do it in a pan or something to contain it. It'll hold its shape and you can use it for pizza. But it turns out you can store it. The basic white dough recipe, you can store for up to 2 weeks. The whole grains, which I make a lot of these days, the 100% whole grain, probably want to keep that to 5 days before it gets denser. But I like it. I like my breads dense, personally. If people don't like that as well, they can sort of don't store them as long. Also, you can freeze it. This kind of dough freezes very well. It's very forgiving. Traditional dry doughs they're not as forgiving. They lose their ability to continue to rise after a day or so.
But that fridge time is key. If I follow your plan, Jeff, I'm going to make a bunch of dough, more than one loaf's worth,
right,
store it in the fridge or freezer as the case may be, and then cut off a little bit at a time, a loaf's worth at a time. And then for that day, I actually make the bread, only 5 minutes of work that day?
That's exactly it. If you divide the time for that you mixed it and you only cleaned up one time, and put it in the fridge, it is about 5 minutes a day of active time. It obviously takes about a half hour in the oven to bake a loaf, although flatbreads will bake in about 6 to 10 minutes. One thing I like to talk about is the only thing that really distinguishes this method is storage. Mm-hmm. And if you don't store the dough, if you don't kind of stagger your batches, it definitely doesn't develop that sourdough flavor that people are looking for. I like to use it. It really improves to my taste buds after about 2 or 3 days. Some people find 14 days is too long. I like it at that point, but it definitely does better if you store it a bit. So definitely do that.
Talking to Jeff Hertzberg, co-author of the new cookbook, The Best of Artisan Bread in 5 Minutes a Day, Favorite Recipes from Bread in 5. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about this super top secret bread baking method? Do you have tricks of your own, a favorite kind of bread you like to make, or a bread fail to share with us? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. By the way, we've got some recipes from Jeff over at WPR.org/Food Friday, including the master recipe, the basic bread dough recipe. We'll talk about that in a bit. Let's bring on a caller now. Tracy is with us in Muskego. Tracy, hi.
Hello there.
What did you want to tell us about, Tracy?
So I just wanted to chime in and let you guys know that I actually became a sourdough baker just this winter. I had a starter that I had received from someone, and it was a dry starter, and I put it in my refrigerator way back when the pandemic started and kind of forgot about it. And in January of this year, I said, you know what, why not? Let's try. And we got it going, and the starter has been wonderful, and it's worked great. And we've had about, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 loaves so far that I bake about once a week. And it's amazingly easy. And it's, I've actually, as I was waiting to come on, I heard your guest talking about the dough in the refrigerator. And I just this last week made a loaf that way, where I had the dough in the refrigerator for about 2.5 days before I baked it. And it did give a much better flavor, a little bit different. Huh. But it's amazing. And we're hooked now.
Tracy,
this is our life now.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. You could share the bread with us sometime, too. Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Jeff, I don't think you're going to try to talk anybody out of using a sourdough starter. If I read your book right, you don't so much.
Well, it depends on what you want, how you want to spend your time. So our original recipe was a way of getting some of that sourdough flavor. And I won't say it's exactly the same, but you get some of that sourdough flavor without having to maintain a starter. Now, that said, in one of our later books, we did include a sourdough recipe, and we included an updated version of our version of true sourdough in The Best of Artisan Bread in 5 Minutes a Day. And it's also on our website, which is breadin5.com, where I'm still answering questions myself if people have questions. There's also a bunch of troubleshooting tips on this sourdough, because until you get a little bit experienced, it's a little bit more finicky. It's definitely more finicky than our method is fail safe. They'll get it right the first time. Sourdough, I think, takes a bit of practice, but yeah, it's delicious. If you want to invest a little more time in it, it's not quite 5 minutes a day.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. Before we go back to our callers, let's check out the master recipe. Again, it's at WPR.org/Food Friday. It's that basic dough recipe you were just talking about. Talk about some of the ingredients on there. How fussy do we need to be about what kind of flour and yeast we use and that kind of thing?
So the answer is not fussy at all. It's a basic white loaf. It calls for supermarket white flour, all purpose, not bread flour, or you do need a little more water, about a quarter to a third cup more water if you use bread flour. You don't have to have it. And the reason we focused on all purpose was that virtually everybody has that in the house already. Bread flour creates sort of a more chewy texture, which a lot of people like. I don't think it's necessary. The key to the success of this loaf is the moisture. And if you use bread flour or one of the premium flours that's higher in protein, you need to use a little bit more water, a quarter cup to a third. Actually, one of the ones, just to let people know, King Arthur all-purpose flour is a good flour, but it takes a little more water. And we have more about that in our the frequently asked questions on the website. Gives some specifics. It's also, of course, in the books. If you go to breadin5.com, questions, FAQs, there's an entry in there about flour varieties. It's number 6 on there. We give you a bunch of different liquid adjustments. But if you get a basic flour from the supermarket like General Mills All Purpose or the supermarket's brand of All Purpose, you don't have to change the water. It's just white flour, any kind of granulated yeast, salt, and we use a coarse salt if you're otherwise it doesn't measure quite right. You use a little bit less if you're using table salt, but kosher salt or other coarse salt, and then water. So 4 ingredients.
We're talking to Jeff Hertzberg, co-founder of the baking site Bread in 5. He's with us today to talk about his latest cookbook, The Best of Artisan Bread in 5 Minutes a Day, Favorite Recipes from Bread in 5. Find that recipe, the master recipe for bread dough, and a couple other recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your favorite breads to bake at home? Do you make a pizza dough or make lots? So much you have to make calzones, even if you weren't planning to. That happened to me once. Desserts, yeasted desserts. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday conversation with Jeff Hertzberg about his latest cookbook, The Best of Artisan Bread in 5 Minutes a Day, Favorite Recipes from Bread in 5. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your bread baking hits and or misses. Your questions for our guest, call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go back to your calls now. Laura is with us in Kenosha County. Laura, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling about a nice little story for me. Well, not nice. About 20 years ago, maybe, I was at the library and I found Garden Way Publishing's The Bread Book, a very old book by Ellen Fesky Johnson. And it had a section in it about sourdough bread. And so I followed the instructions and I started making sourdough bread starter and I had so much fun doing it. But then I forgot some in the fridge. So I went to use it and it smelled kind of off. But I thought, oh, heck, I'll use it anyway. But I didn't save any of it. And it was the best sourdough bread I could ever even imagine. And it was gone. You can't recreate it. You know, it's like forever. So,
Laura, can't you make a new starter and then forget about it for a couple of years?
You know, I don't know if it would turn out the same, but it's worth a try because it was wonderful.
Laura, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Jeff, with your starter doughs or your doughs, it's kind of a user to lose it scenario, right? We can't forget about it for a long time and hope to get good bread out of that.
That's right. But here's the thing. You usually can bring it back to life. And I'm not a big believer in the idea that there's some secret microbacterial culture that you had. The microorganisms that create that flavor and create that sourdough effect, they're actually in the flour. Flour isn't a sterile product. It's not really in the air. And the other thing that a lot of people have been sort of debunking is the idea that there's something specific about San Francisco sourdough or Alaska sourdough. You can make great sourdough anywhere. The microorganisms are in the flour, and you can usually bring it back. The other thing, what I usually do when I'm on a jag of making actual sourdough, I'll do a process called drying out, which is I know I won't be able to feed it for a while. So I'll put a whole bunch of flour in it, as much as you possibly can, before it gets crumbly. And then you just cover that and put it in the fridge. Always leave a little airspace, by the way, because especially if it's in glass, it can actually explode from the fermentation, which we have a picture of on our website. Nobody was injured. That's good. But the glass did shatter. Frankly, you should use plastic. It's probably safer. You can always bring it back to life. And I think that the caller should try again. You can get that flavor back. I don't think it really was because you forgot about it for a couple of years.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. All right, Jeff, suppose I've got my fridge full of dough to make my bread a day or however often I make it. Now, am I just like throwing a lump on and it's going to come out the shape of a bread loaf? Or can I take that basic master recipe and do, you know, funky forms and shapes?
You can literally do any of the shapes in the book, including pizza, including flatbread, like pita. You could be sloppy. And sometimes when I'm in a hurry and I'm going to be using it not for company, I'll literally just take it out of the refrigerator, shape it very roughly, drop it on either a piece of parchment paper or a pizza peel covered with cornmeal, and it'll be a completely odd shape. And I kind of don't care for certain things. You can make a round boule, which is French for ball, the ball-shaped bread. You can make a baguette. You can make a loaf pan bread for sandwiches. The resting times are different with these. The basic boule is a one-pounder. If you can go 40 minutes, that's great. 90 minutes of resting. This is passive time now. That's even better. 90 minutes for a big loaf pan bread to let it warm up and expand a bit. Now, if you're making a flatbread or a really skinny baguette, you don't need all that time. You can go 20 minutes, or for a flatbread, it can be basically immediate. You can just roll it out, top it with pizza toppings, and throw it into the oven.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Jeff Hertzberg, co-author of The Best of Artisan Bread and 5 Minutes a Day Favorite Recipes from Bread in 5. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Ruth is with us in Eau Claire. Ruth, hi.
Hi. Thank you. I'm wondering what your experience is working with spelt flour, because we're having a lot of success working with it within our own home, and I find that it's just easier for us to digest it. We don't get, you know, sort of, we have a little bit of sensitivity to gluten, and it doesn't seem to trigger that as much as like an all-purpose flour will.
And are you making bread with your spelt flour there, Ruth?
Yeah, absolutely, and muffins and whatever else, dumplings, whatever.
Thanks for the call. Glad you're enjoying it. Jeff, you look at a variety of grains in the book. Did you get into spelt?
Yeah, we did, but we didn't put the spelt in The Best of Artisan Bread in 5 Minutes a Day. It's a little bit more finicky for stored bread dough like ours. So in an earlier book called The New Healthy Bread in 5 Minutes a Day, a lot of our books, we have 8 of them now, have been responses to people who wrote in on breadin5.com, like the caller, and said, could I use spelt? And so we started experimenting with spelt, and we found you could do it. The gluten isn't quite as strong. There isn't quite as much gluten as wheat flour. And we do hear reports that some people who don't have great experience health-wise with regular wheat flour will use spelt. Now, be really careful. Spelt is a wheat variety. People who have celiac disease cannot eat spelt. But people who just don't like or don't get great sort of sensations from regular all-purpose flour have used Spelt. You've got to adjust the water. We've got the adjustments in new healthy bread in 5 minutes a day. It's delicious. It's an ancient grain that apparently the Romans were using Spelt, not wheat, and all this sort of pizzas that came down the line in Italy were actually made with Spelt. So it's a great product. It's not available everywhere. It's not for celiacs, but it definitely makes good bread.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Lori now in Madison. Lori, hello.
Hi. I was wondering if with any of your recipes, if a bread machine can be used, or are bread machines obsolete now?
Do you have a, before you go, Lori, do you have a bread machine?
Yes, I do.
And you use it?
No, I have not in a very long time.
Maybe it is obsolete in your house. Jeff, your thoughts on bread machines as an option?
So that was one of the first things I thought of buying when I wanted to make homemade bread all the time. And it definitely works. People have asked us, could we mix the dough in the bread machine? The answer is yes. But then the question of, can you bake the dough in the... So our dough is very wet. And my only concern with the bread machine is that it's a closed system with a sort of a cover around it. And I worry that the moisture might not dissipate. We've gotten all different reports on that. Some people have said our dough works great. First of all, you have to make a smaller batch. Ours makes, because we're storing it and breaking off pieces, it's 4 pounds of dough. And I know the bread machine won't handle 4 pounds. Probably 2 pounds is the max. It'll take some experimentation, but it'll probably work. But since our approach was a way to, well, basically avoid the bread machine, we've never really tested it ourselves. But my guess is it'll work at least on some level, certainly for mixing the dough, a smaller batch. You can always break our big recipe in half if you don't need quite so much dough around.
Lori, good luck. We'll go to Carrie now in West Bend. Carrie, hi.
Hi, I am so glad to hear this author on the radio. I have his book, and we make his bread, and it's so easy. I am not a baker, and to rip off a hunk of bread and put it a little bit on a pizza peel with some cornmeal and have that smell come out of my oven 40 minutes later is incredible. So I love his method. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, Carrie, do you usually make like the master recipe and just go with that? Or have you found a funky variety that you like?
We just use the master recipe. My husband loves to make bread, and I bought him this book. I had the book before, and somehow I lost it, but I bought it again for him for Christmas, and it took a little arm twisting, but that's the only kind of bread he makes now. We'll just add our own nuts and seeds to the master recipe. We make them small, so because they're best when they're just warm and fresh out of the oven, and then they can be gone in a day. So we just make small little loaves, and they're wonderful. I love that method.
Carrie, thanks a lot for sharing that. Jeff, let's talk about adding nuts and seeds. Do you have favorites or recommendations or ways to get the most out of them?
Yeah, I mean, so long as you're relatively conservative, you can put just about anything in. In the basic master recipe, I very often, even whether or not I'm using rye, I'll put a tablespoon and a half of caraway in a 4 pound batch. But you can probably double that. You probably put a quarter cup if you really like it, up to a half a pound of chopped nuts, especially with raisins, is fantastic in our rye dough. And we have a recipe for that in one of the earlier books. Best of doesn't have that. Somebody's going to call in and say, which book should I get? And the answer is, it depends what you like. If you want to come to the website, breadandfive.com, you can sort of figure out. And we also can answer questions about what's in each one. The latest book really is a smattering of everything. And I just, only reason I mention this, it doesn't have the nuts and raisins in it. A lot of people like that.
Thanks for that call. And Jeff, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob. This has been so fun.
That was Jeff Hertzberg, co-founder of the Bread in 5 website. We've been talking about his latest cookbook. It's called The Best of Artisan Bread in 5 Minutes a Day. Favorite recipes from Bread in 5. Hey, we've got some recipes that he shared with us. I'll find a link to the cookbook and those recipes at wpr.org/Food Friday. There's that master recipe for the dough. A couple more that we didn't even have time to get into. Pizza margarita, so how to make the pizza dough. And a recipe for what to put on top of it. And then a raspberry brioche braid. That looks pretty cool. A little more complicated. Find those all at wpr.org/Food Friday. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, what does inflation mean for your long-term money plans? A financial planner joins the program with advice and answers to your questions about how to deal with inflation. That's Monday morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Here's a public service announcement. Remember to set your clocks ahead an hour this weekend. This is really important for us on the radio. We want to make sure our guests also switch their clocks so they show up at the right time. Technically, the switch happens Sunday morning at 2 a.m. You don't have to stay up late to make the switch right at that moment. Saturday night or Sunday morning will do just fine. In fact, since we effectively lose an hour of the weekend, it's a good time to think about going to bed maybe a little on the early side. Unless you're really smart back in November and banked that extra hour of sleep to use it this weekend. I don't know how that would work, but if you figured it out, more power to you. About to become the other kind of Central Time, this is Central Time.